It's so good to be with you guys tonight. It's interesting about story. I was talking to somebody about this today, and how I think one of the most underutilized things that we have is our story. And especially if you've gone through some really tough times, I think that sometimes we underestimate the power of the process of going through and pulling out pieces of your story, not your whole story, but pieces of your story to really help some people. And I kind of liken it like this. Over both my pre-Christian life, which I became a Christian at 21, and my post-Christian life, both have things in it that I'm not proud of. And things that I wish I never would have done or said. And in many cases, would be very embarrassed even to tell you the story in certain settings. But I've also had some very painful things as well that I wish never would have happened, that were beyond my control. And all of those things, if you were to look at them, try to get this visualization. Someday I'm going to do an illustrated sermon on this. But pretend like this cup is a trash can. And I'm standing here, and every time I tell you one of the things that I did that I didn't like, I wrote it in a piece of paper, and then I wadded it up as trash and stuck it onto my coat, onto my jacket. And I went through about 20, maybe 30 things, and wadded all those things up and stuck it all over my coat. Pretty soon my whole jacket would be trash. And I would feel like trash after going through all of that and talking about it and revealing it and showing it off and all that kind of stuff. And so I would go inside this trash can because that's where trash belongs. It's in a trash can. But just because you're in a trash can, it doesn't mean that you can't. It just means that you've got some trash that has to be dealt with. And a trash can is not a trash can not. Okay? And so, I know that sounds cheesy. I saw it on a meme someplace. But it's true. And what I've done is I've taken the coat off. I've held it in my hand like this with all the trash on it. And I've stepped out of the trash can. And I'm living a great life, but I haven't thrown away the coat. Are you catching me?
Yeah.
I'm throwing it over my shoulder and I'm going on a journey. It's still got trash on it. It's still on my coat. I haven't tried to get away from it. I haven't tried to say goodbye to it because there's going to be a time that I'm going to need to use this coat for somebody. There's going to be somebody that needs this coat because there's a story on this coat. The trash of my life, that I can take a piece of it off and use it to help you when you struggle, when you feel pain, or when you feel lost. And so the way that I look at my story is there's things that I keep and hold deep inside my heart, and there's other things that I keep on the coat and throw it over my shoulder, and I'm not going to let it hold me back. But I'm not going to also try to forget about it. I'm going to use it. I'm not going to use it until I don't feel the pain from it like I used to. I always use this phrase, I never preach my wounds, I only preach my scars. You get that?
Yeah.
Never preach your wounds, only preach your scars. I know we're kind of heading off really deep, right off the, you know, kind of heavy and stuff like that. But I just wanted to say that in the front piece of this, is the story is meant to help other people. And when you have wounds in your life, just know that when those wounds heal, you'll get a great scar, and scars tell stories, and scars are stronger than the original skin.
Yeah.
And so even though that was a painful time, you got through it, and you'll get through other painful times in the future, but when somebody else has a wound, you'll be able to take your scar and tell the story, and that'll help them get there. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about my story, and it's broken down into some pieces, and I jotted them down so I wouldn't forget any of the sections, because I think all of them are really, really important. But the first section is when I was a kid, And there's a block of my story that has happy memories of being a bald-head kid that lived in Lake City area up in Washington. I went to Nathan Hale High School, before that Jade Adams Junior High, and before that Lake City Elementary that is now a shopping center. And when I was between the earliest I can remember till about probably 12 or 13, we spent a majority of our weekends up on Whidbey Island at my dad's cabin, where my fondest memories were. This is where I learned how to work, chopping down trees, moving rocks, playing on the beach, building rafts, tree forts, jumping off cliffs, hiking, catching fish off of drop lines, off of docks, and things like that, and great memories of having sleepovers with my friends, and it was a great life. It unfortunately got interrupted at around 12 years old when I came home from school one day and my mom said, "Stephen, I have to tell you something." And I was the oldest of three boys. My mom was awesome. She was the kind of mom that took all of the kids to the baseball games, and every day after school everybody came to my house because she always had fresh cookies waiting for us, or sandwiches. Whatever we wanted, she was there, she made them, and everybody hung out at my house because my mom was so awesome. Her name was Maxine. Everybody called her Max. She was rad, but one day I came home and Maxine, my mom, told me, "Steve, there's something wrong with me. I'm sick." And I said, "Oh, don't worry, Mom, you'll get better." And she says, "No, you don't understand. This kind of sick doesn't go away that easy." And I said, "No, Mom, I promise you, you'll get through this." And that began a really difficult season. I got exposed to what had been going on for years, and she'd hid it from me, that she was what at the time they called manic depressive or bipolar, and she was very extreme. She would get super low, try to drink herself until she passed out. It was very common to see a big case of what was called Rhinelander. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Rhinelander beer is the cheapest beer you can buy. She'd buy 24 bottles in the morning and be gone by noon. 24 bottles. And I would sit on her bed and hold her hand and say, "Mom, it's going to be okay. Don't worry." I'd sit there for hours because she was so sad and so depressed. And it was really hard for me. And over the next few years, she would do some crazy stuff. Like when she'd swing out of being low, she'd go really manic, and then she would start doing crazy stuff, like walk out in front of cars and yell at people and run up and down the street yelling at 2-3 in the morning, waking up all the neighbors. It was really embarrassing for our family. And it was a tough growing up years. And my mom tried to commit suicide the first time. She tried to overdose with pills. The second time, she tried to drink herself to death. And then she cut her wrist. None of those things worked. Then she would try to walk in front of a car. One time she tried to jump off of a bridge and somebody stopped her. Another time I came home from school, my little brother's friend came out of the house with a hose in his hand, covered in black, and smoke coming out of all the windows. And he says, "Steve, your mom tried to burn the house down." And I came over and I put it out with a garden hose. And he's just like freaking out. And right as I got there, the fire department got there, and she tried to kill herself. She doused the whole bedroom with gasoline, lit it on fire, and somehow, some way, this kid puts it out with a garden hose. How do you do that, right? So after that, probably 5 or 6 times, she got hauled off in a straitjacket, just like you see on the movies. Really tough to see your mom that you love so much in a straitjacket. Do you guys even know what a straitjacket is? Most of us have never even seen one except for the movies. But as 14 years old, I saw this. That was really hard. And then after that, I started searching big time. That led me to doing a lot of drugs, partying quite a bit, struggled to be accepted. I felt like an outcast at school. My self-esteem was really challenged back in those days. I did anything to get people's attention. Those of you that were at the church on Sunday, I think it was Sunday or the week before, I told the story about the guys that spit on me and surrounded me. These popular guys all surrounded me, spit on me for about 15 minutes straight with my friend. And they were too big for us to do anything about it, and every time we got up, they'd push us back down. And it was horrifying. And so my self-worth took a big hit. And then I remember deciding I was going to have this party at my dad's cabin. Invited all these kids up there. 104 people showed up. He totally destroyed my dad's property. The place that I remembered as a kid as being a sacred place, a place that life's memories were happening. By the second day, it was the most horrific thing that I'd ever done. And I couldn't stop it. It was too late. They destroyed the whole place. And I invited them to come to my place, and they destroyed my place. So my self-esteem just kept going down, 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 down. After that took place, I got a job in a shipyard. I just met Tina, who is my wife now. She's my girlfriend. I was 17 years old. And we had just been dating for a short time. I got a job in the shipyard, and a guy starts telling me about Jesus. I was so hurting from the things with my mom. My mom was still trying to commit suicide, 16 different attempts, all 16 different ways, once with a gun. I mean, it's just everything, right? It's horrific. Tried to hang herself. And I'm not trying to be depressing, but this is just what I was going through, right? And so this made me want to search. Drugs weren't doing it. Partying wasn't doing it. Once I was a punk rocker for a while, then I was a cowboy. and then I was like, new wave, that's a kind of music they used to have back in the day. And just anything I could, you know. And just trying to find who am I. And the only thing I didn't try was being goth. And so I didn't quite know how to get my skin that color. And I had an afro that was out to here. It was huge. It was a massive afro. That was probably my life-saving thing because the afro actually got me some pretty good respect. But I just met Tina. Our relationship had begun, and she got introduced to my family. She loved my mom. Even though my mom was going through stuff, she was right there for my mom. And my mom loved Tina a lot. That was one of the things that kept her going. She says, I just want to stay alive long enough to see you guys get married. And, I started working in the shipyard, and this guy starts telling me about Jesus. And I'm so polite that I will just listen to people. But I also knew that one time I hitchhiked down to Mexico from Tacoma. Haven't I ever told you guys that? I hitchhiked to Mexico. I had a backpack, me and a friend. His name was John Effing Brown. That was his name.
Nothing.
All of a sudden, you guys got really quiet. Yes, John Effing Brown. Only we didn't say effing; we said the whole word. That was his nickname. Everybody called him that, okay? Because he was such a jerk. And so John Effing Brown and I we hitchhiked all the way down to Mexico, right? And when we got to Mexico. I'll segue for a second. I'm hitchhiking down to Mexico, and in Tacoma, I get a ride with this guy, and he says, I'm going to San Diego. If you guys got money for breakfast, if you buy me breakfast every morning, I'll take you down there. And we said, will you go to the Oregon coast? And he said, sure. So he takes us down to Oregon coast, which is like, this takes an extra day. Because he just got out of the military and he was going down south. And he gives us a ride all the way down to San Diego. And when we get there, he goes, hey, my parents are kind of like religious fanatics. And if you want, I'll ask them if you could stay in the house, but you'll probably have to go to church with them tomorrow. I said, hey, I'll go to church, no problem. If we can. And he came out and told us, hey, you can't stay in the house, but you can stay in the bed of the pickup truck. There's a canopy and everything. I go, perfect. That's like a hotel room. And so because we were all prepared to sleep in bridges, under bridges, and all the way down. We were going to sleep. That's about how we planned to sleep, right? So being in the back of a pickup was great. Next morning, they got up and they took us to church. And I walked in. I was like 17 years old, 18 years old. I walked in. And the presence of God was so strong in this church that tears just started going down my face. And I didn't know what was going on. People are like lifting their hands, singing songs. And I'm like going, oh my gosh. all around me, and I could feel this presence, right? And I never knew anything much about Jesus. I went to Catholic Church and stuff like that, and I knew that Jesus was a statue, okay? And he lived on his cross. And he was pretty bloody on the statues in the Catholic Church, and it was kind of gross to me. But to go there and see these people worship, something went off in my heart. And so I, right then, man, if they would have done an altar call, I would have ran up there. Because I wanted whatever these people had. And when it was all over, nobody talked to me about it. The parents took me back and dropped me off at the truck to sleep in. And then they went out to breakfast. And I was just like going, oh my God, I can't wait to do this again. So when I'm in the shipyard, I'm thinking back to this trip that I went, you know, earlier this year down to Mexico, and this guy invites me to go to church, and I'm like going, yeah, I'll go. And I went, and I walked into the church, and the night before I partied really hard and did a lot of drugs and all kinds of stuff that night, and walked in the next morning to church, and just like, I mean, I think I was probably up till 2-3 in the morning, and I went to the early service. And I wasn't going to miss it because I promised this guy I'd show up. But I walked in. I know I reeked really bad. And I walked in, and the lady at the front door grabbed my hand. She looked me right in the eyes. She goes, what is your name? I says, Steve. She goes, Steve, it's really great to meet you. And I was like, whoa, nobody's ever said that to me before. Why would anybody be glad to meet me? Because I knew all the trash that I'd done the night before, the week before, the month before, the year before. And that I was set up to give my life to Jesus. I raised my hand. I thought everybody was going to raise their hand after church. I was the only one. He says, young man, would you just come up here? So I walked up in front of the entire church. He says, you want to receive Jesus? I said, yeah, I do. And that was the day I made Jesus Christ my Lord. And the interesting thing, one of the guys that prayed for me goes to this church now. This was 30 years ago. His name's Orville. And he was there back in the day. He was just out of a drug rehab program, and he made me feel like $1 million. Anyway, flash forward. We start living for God. I start volunteering all over the church, helping with all kind, everything from food drives to working with kids and youth groups and stuff like that. And I was loving life. I turned cold turkey. I stopped drugs, partying, all that stuff, cold turkey just like that. And it was like, I mean, there was no ramp down. It was cut cold. Even my friends, I wish I wouldn't have done it this way, but I did. I just felt like I had to. I cut everything. I made all new friends, immersed myself in the church, rehabbed myself, totally renewed my mind, got a vision for my life, started living for God, and beautiful things started to happen. Well, right after that, you know, I get a phone call from my dad, and he says, Steve, Tina and I had just gotten married. We just bought a house. We just moved into it. We'd only been there 6 months. And he goes, Steve, your mom's gone. I said, I know, Dad. She'll come back. She'd leave for 2-3 weeks at a time. Nobody knew where she's at. One time I found her in a hotel apartment in, up on Capitol Hill. We tracked her down. And we went into this sleazebag apartment and went to go knock on the door. And it just kind of opened up because there was no latch. There was no doorknob. It just opened up. That's how run down it was. I looked in there and you could smell gas. The gas stove was going. And there was my mom laying in a pile of urine on the floor and vomit. And my dad was with me. And he reached down and touched her neck to see if she had a pulse. And she had a pulse. He goes, she's still alive. And he scoops her up in his arms like this. And he looks at me right in the eyes and he says, it's not supposed to be like this. It's not supposed to be like this. And that's that. If you know my dad, that's a lot of words for my dad because he doesn't talk. And we got her out of there. We took her to the hospital. And And so she would leave and do these little jaunts like this, and we'd have to go find her. So when he said she's gone, I thought she'd come back. And he says, no, no, this time she's gone. I go, what do you mean, Dad? He says, she went out for a swim and never came back. And what she did, she drowned herself out in the Bremerton. There's a big place where it's really dangerous to swim, and they tell people don't swim out here. And she went out there. She was almost qualified to go to the Olympics. She was that good of a swimmer. So she just swam out to where she couldn't handle the current, and then just let herself drown. And that was the beginning of the end. And that was the beginning of ministry for me, because I remember looking at her in the coffin and saying to myself, Mom, I'm going to do what you wanted me to do. She was a Christian. She knew Jesus. She was the one that always wanted us to be Christians. My dad was Catholic. She was Protestant. And so she wrote me this Bible one time. I put my name in it. She says, Steve, I love... This is before I was a Christian. She says, I love how you express your love for God by your admiration of the trees and the stars and the moon and the mountains and the hiking and all of God's creation. Just always remember, God created it all and he created you. And there will be one day you'll meet your maker and you will honor him. I still have the Bible that she wrote it in. I'll never let go of that Bible. And so, she loved Jesus, and I kind of lost track of where I was at. But anyway, that was where I decided that I was going to help people, because I knew the pain that she felt, and I wanted to give my life to make sure that anybody that ever felt pain like that would have somebody to talk to, would have some hope, would have somebody to hold their hand on the side of the bed if they needed it. And so this is why on Sunday mornings when you hear me preach, sometimes people say it's kind of like a cross between something spiritual and going to therapy. And the reason being is I run everything through this filter that says I need to deliver a message that reaches a very successful, strong business person and a person that's at the bottom of the barrel. The same message has to reach both. And so I've always run it through that filter. If it couldn't help my mom, I won't preach it. If it can't help somebody in Africa, I won't preach it. If it can't help a guy in a corporate setting, then I won't preach it. Does that make sense? And so I dedicated my life to saying, I'm going to honor my mom. And I'm not going on a downward spiral because she's gone, but I'm going to honor her by making something out of my life. Right? So I gave my life to the ministry. And I didn't know that I'd go into full-time ministry. I just knew that what I was going to do was honor God for the rest of my life. And so we started volunteering, like many of you guys do. I started finding out I had a gift with teenagers. The people in the church that ran the youth group made everything so extremely boring that I had to rescue those teenagers from it. And I did wild and crazy stuff. I used to take kids hiking, we'd jump off bridges. I'd take them up to Salmon LaSalle. We'd jump off the bridge at Salmon LaSalle. And sometimes we'd pull up the bus next to the bridge and jump off the bus that went over the bridge and into the water there. And we did it at midnight when you couldn't see the water below. And those kinds of things. I did that with teenagers because I felt like, why should straight teenagers not have fun? Why do only the party kids get to have fun? Why do party people get to really have a great time? I knew what it was like to party, and I knew what it was like to have fun. I'd go camping with my party friends. We'd party for 7 days straight, drink all kinds of beer. I'm telling you, this guy right here can drink beer. I mean, I can drink beer. I can drink more beer than any of you guys here. Okay? I'm serious. I can. I don't do it anymore like that, okay? But you know what I'm talking about. And that was the kind of lifestyle I lived. I was crazy. I was an animal. People were afraid of me. I was so extreme, okay? But you know what? I said, you know what? I'm going to turn all this energy that I was putting into living for the world, I'm going to put it into the ministry and make the ministry vibrant. This is why, even around our church, If you look around, all the fun stuff is stuff that I initiate. I put the tire swing up. I make the unicorn. I get the God dog kick out there. Okay? Why is that? Because I want to have fun too. I want kids to have fun. I want them to come to church and think this is the coolest place on the planet. Okay? I want to have a great time. And I want to come in here and I want to enjoy myself. I want to like this place. I want to see art on the walls. I want to see stuff. Okay? And so I got involved with the ministry and I had the time of my life. And then I felt this call to start this church, our real life church. And man, God just did something inside of me. And I just felt like, you know what? I really want to create a place that is like has a sense of community and where people are real and where people aren't like all showy and dressing up and trying to impress everybody with how smart they are or how Christian they are. And where people aren't all uptight and making sure that they talk different. Because I was tired of seeing Christians that talk differently at church than at home. It's weird. It's almost like they put on an accent when they get to church, you know. It's like, wow, who are you? I know I work with you. And when you go to church, you talk differently. And I didn't like that. And so I said, I wanted to have a church where people are the same at home and at church. Okay? And if you aren't proud of how you are at home, then change it. Fix it. Okay? And make your face at church be like your face at home. Be a nice person. Be a good guy. And so we started Real Life Church. We called it Real Life because that's our mission. And over the years, some really tough stuff have happened. One of the things that happened to me as we started the church was I lost my faith. I lost my faith about 10 years ago. And my first introduction to faith was a certain way of thinking about the Bible and Jesus and God and how prayer works and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, it wasn't working the way I thought it should work. And prayers weren't getting answered the way I thought they should get answered. And every time I turned around, there was a doubt and there was this unbelief that was filling my heart and my mind. And it wasn't good. And I lost my faith. And I was a pastor. It's very difficult to lose your faith when you're a pastor. Can you imagine what that would be like? When all of a sudden you're doubting everything that you believe? And what it did is it sent me on a journey to be able to seek and read the Bible like never before. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And one guy said to me, he says, Steve, listen, thank God you lost your faith because now God can finally reveal himself to you. Your belief in God and your faith in God was sculpted in your mind and by the minds of people around you. But now it's going to be sculpted by God. Because now the things that everybody else just handed you and the things that you just believed on the initial, all those things are being challenged right now. And as you lay in bed at night and as you pray and as you seek God and as you read his word, you're going to find a whole new understanding. And he was right. And it was the best thing that happened to me. And man, I'll tell you, one day on a cruise ship, I was sitting there, I was reading this book, and all of a sudden the lights came on, everything started to make sense. And all of a sudden, I was like, I ran downstairs, it was 1 a.m. I was sitting up at the top of the cruise ship with this little light, listening to people laugh as they were eating chocolate bar down below. And I'm reading this book, and I get this revelation. All of a sudden, tears start coming down my face. And I said, Jesus, I think I'm getting born again. And I'm a pastor. I've been a pastor for 8 years. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting rocked right now. And I went down and I told my wife, and she says, can you tell me about it in the morning, please? And she goes back to sleep. She couldn't get it. She couldn't understand it was my own thing that I was going through. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me, you guys. And so that led me on this new path. At first, some of the stuff that I would teach right as I was going through that, people were like, where's this guy coming from? He's searching. He's asking crazy questions. He's saying some funny stuff. I lost some friends and I lost some church members during that time. But finally, I found my way. And when I found my way, now I'm hitting a stride and things are starting to flow and things are starting to flow really, really well. And people are starting to see what took me probably 8 years to work out in my own process, it's flowing well. And, you know, recently, in the last couple of years or a few years, we merged this, our church with this church. This was Covington Christian Fellowship, and Real Life Church came here. We used to meet in a school, and now we merged with this church, and so we have a building. And now we've grown. At the time when we were in the school, we were about 400 people, and now there's about 1,200 people, actually probably 1,400 people on Easter. So they say that's the size of your church, so about 1,400 people. They call this their home, and things are going well. I've got 3 boys. That's been a journey as well. 2 of them are in the ministry. One of them is building his testimony still. You know, life is good there. I'm happily married. I've got a beautiful home, a beautiful ministry, a beautiful life, and I carry around that coat on the back of my shoulder. And I pull off different pieces of that coat to share with people like you. So that's part of my story. There's so much more, but you'll have to come on Sundays to hear the rest. I tell pieces of my story all the time. Does anybody have any questions, or anybody want any clarification, or is anybody going through something, or did any of my part of my story say, I want to hear a little bit more about that piece? Nate? Okay, you can talk to me afterwards. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Anybody else? Nobody wants to stay in front of anybody. Okay, there'll be a line that forms right over here after we're all done. But anyway, that's my story, and let me wrap it up with this thought, okay? Let me give you my favorite scripture, and this is the one that this is the one that I think will help you more than any other scripture when it comes to getting through tough times and dealing with relationships and stuff like that. It's Philippians chapter 4. It says this. In verse 6, it says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He's done. Then you'll experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Now, here's the best part. One final thing. Fix your thoughts on what's true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me do. Then the God of peace will be with you. Think on things. Fix your mind, Paul says. Fix it, set it, focus it, discipline it, attach it to things that are honest, pure, just, and of good report, things that are virtuous and praiseworthy. Focus your mind on those. And when you start to go down a path that says, I don't think they like me, I think they're rude, I think they're hurtful, I'm never going to forgive them, you're going down the wrong path. Pull your mind back and fix it on things that are honest, pure, and just, and of good report. Things that are virtuous and praiseworthy. Think and meditate, the Amplified Bible says. Think and meditate on these things, and then you'll experience God's peace. And that's why I feel peaceful. I have a lot of things going on in my life right now. A lot of things. But I'm always peaceful. Well, most of the time. Sometimes when I deal with the city, I'm not peaceful. But then it gets me back on track. But keep your mind focused on those things, and you watch that God of peace will be with you. I hope some of that helped you. Thank you for letting me share. Let me pray. God, I pray that all of us would be able to use our story. Help us be okay with the journey we're on. Father, sometimes we always look back and we kind of kick ourselves in the past, or we look towards the future and see how far it's going to be till we get there. But tonight, I just pray that we'd be okay with where we're at. And just celebrate the good things that are going on around us, and help us notice the people that you've placed in our lives, and help us enjoy them. And may our stories be used as we're on this journey. In Jesus' name, amen.